Have you noticed that politicians struggle to enact the things they run on? And that regardless of who wins elections, lawmakers cannot pass just whatever legislation they like. They are bound by the Overton window. This concept, coined by the Mackinac Center's Joe Overton, describes the range of ideas that are politically acceptable at any time. Politicians typically only act within a narrow window of policy options. And on the Overton Window podcast, we talk to the people who work to shift the Overton window and change what is politically possible. I'm Mike Van Beek, and joining me today is Warren Anderson, who is an associate professor of economics at the University of Michigan Dearborn and a member of the Mackinac Center's Board of Scholars. Warren, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
You've been doing some research on child care regulations. What sparked your interest in this issue?
So it was actually a paper written by a guy I know, Vincent Galozzo, and he was relating it to the fertility crisis. And so I thought that was interesting. And so then I went from that paper and I looked back at some other older papers on the impact that regulation has on childcare. And so looking at that literature on the impact that regulation has on childcare and then bring it to the fertility crisis, then that made more sense to me.
Yeah, and what is the relationship between fertility and childcare regulations?
Right, so they find that the more stringent, the harsher the childcare regulations, then the fewer kids people have relative to what they say they want to have. And so the way this works is it's just more costly to have kids. And so if we go back, before we get to the fertility, we can go back and look at the prior literature that the impact regulation has on childcare costs. And then that can hopefully build the foundation to which you can then make the claim that regulation will then cause people to have fewer children. That's okay. Right. So one. Yeah. So just, I guess, some background here. So some numbers I found. So from about 15 years ago and about 5 years ago, it's about 3 in 5 kids under the age of 5. Go to some sort of childcare. So it's about 60% of kids will go through this. So this isn't a small minority. This is a fairly large population that will actually go through some sort of childcare. So if I look at one paper, for instance, it was regulation and the cost of childcare. What this found was that the regulations as to how many kids one adult can have. And so this paper found that a 1 infant increase in a child-to-staff ratio, it leads to a decrease of the cost between 10 to 20%, or about $1,000 to $2,000. So in Michigan, if you're an infant, you have to have 1 adult per 4 infants, which is actually about the average. And but some states require 5, some states have 3. So if you change that by just 1, right, if you increase it by 1, then you can cut costs by 10 to 20%. Right,
and those costs have an impact on women's decisions about how many children they might have. Like, how do researchers figure that out?
Right. So to go back to the first paper I mentioned, right. So what they did was they had a sample of 12,000 people, and they asked how many kids do you wish you had, and then they can see how many. And they have it by state, and then they look and see how many children women have on average in the state. And then they calculate that gap. And so that gap they call the fertility gap. And what they did is they looked at all the regulations in childcare, and then they compared that to the gap to see if there's any significance there, the regulations and the fertility gap.
Okay, states with stricter regulations than the fertility gap in those states was larger. Is that how it works?
Yeah, so that's right. So that's what they're arguing. And the mechanism there was right. It just increased costs. So this is one example where the cap of how many kids you can have per adult, then if you have a lower cap, then you increase cost. And so it makes it more expensive. And there are other... Okay. Another paper here looked at, right, so that the gist of that paper was higher regulation leads to higher cost. And then there's another paper that looked at regulations and the number of childcare facilities. And so they found that if you have more regulations, then you can actually have fewer childcare facilities. And so the prior one said there's higher costs, but this paper, it looks at it and you have fewer places to just send your child because the regulations become more cumbersome. It's harder to navigate. And so you'll just have fewer places where you could have your child go while you work. Right. And so that's another mechanism by which regulation works. It just leads to fewer openings for people to actually go to.
Yeah, and I imagine as well, you mentioned the staff to child ratios that have to be maintained. Like for Michigan, it's one in, you know, one adult for every four infants. Obviously, if those are increased or made more stringent, then that's, you know, that's more people you need. And there might be, you know, not enough workers who are willing to take those jobs. I think that's one of the things that I've read about in Michigan. That's a challenge is for daycare, childcare providers is to find enough employees to meet those ratios.
Yeah, I can believe it. It's hard work. I mean, so it is hard work. So if we look at these ratios, Michigan is actually about average for infants, like 0 to 1 years old. We're at 4. The national average is 4.28. But so it's about average. And then, but once you get a little higher, the Michigan gets lower and lower. So Michigan requires 1 to 4, like one adult per 4 kids up to age 2.5. Whereas the national average at 2 to 2.5 is actually 7. So Michigan, right, it's substantially stricter in Michigan than other places, right? The 16 states actually require, say, 8 kids per adult, whereas Michigan is still at 4. And so it's these little regulations, right? So Michigan is at the national average for a lot of childcare regulations. But for the child to staff ratio, for certain ages, Michigan is way out of line with the national average. So here I'm not looking to shift the Overton window. I just want Michigan to go to the national average. Like for infants, we're basically at the national average. And then, wait, if you want the other numbers, for age 1 to 1.5, Michigan is at 4, national average is 5. And then for 1.5 to 2, Michigan's at 4, and the national average is 5.5. So Michigan's stuck with 4, but the national average goes up. So Michigan, you can easily just raise that number by 1 or 2, and then that will make it easier for childcare providers to provide childcare at a lower cost for consumers.
Yeah. And of course, childcare costs are one of the things that gets discussed a lot in conversations about affordability and challenges like that, that a lot of families are facing. But I think some people say, well, yes, that would lower costs, but wouldn't it have a harmful effect on the quality of the childcare that is provided?
Yeah, you could say that. But the thing is, I'm just saying Michigan should go to the national average. So it's hard to say that the quality will have hurtful effects on kids when more than 50% of states already have less strict regulations. So it's, I mean, so far as I could tell, there's absolutely no impact on regulation or having lax regulation and worse quality. In fact, there's actually a study that found the exact opposite. There was a study that found that higher regulation led to worse quality, not better quality. And the argument that they made is, say that you have $100 to spend on your childcare facility, just for ease. If the regulatory burden goes up, then that means you have to take money and devote it towards addressing the regulation. So for instance, they looked at 35 different areas of regulation, including the routines that you do, the furnishings you have, language reasoning experience, and all these other things. So if you're taking some money and devoting it towards meeting the regulation, you're not necessarily devoting it towards your facility or your workers. So what they found is that you actually had lower pay with higher regulation. And then with lower pay, you can have the unintended consequence of not having some higher quality applicants because they can make more money elsewhere. So in this case, this paper actually found that higher regulation can lead to lower quality, not higher quality. Which is kind of like the backwards of what you would think. But if you have fixed amount of money to spend, then you devote money to, like, say, buying more furniture or whatever to meet some regulation, as opposed to putting it towards, you know, your staff.
Yeah, it's like creating higher fixed costs for the childcare centers, and the only thing that they can do to offset some of those fixed costs then are to offer lower wages to employees, which then won't attract as good of employees. And I assume then that the type of people that you get to work in these places are really maybe what makes a difference in the quality that is provided, and less so than the type of furnishings you have or any of the other kinds of regulations that the state requires?
Yeah, I assume that's the case in most industries. It's the actual person that does the service, not everything around that individual.
Yeah, and that's similar in K-12 education as well. One of the strongest findings in that research is how important the quality of the teacher is in the classroom to the ability of the students to learn. And it's less important the curriculum they're using or the desk they're sitting in or the lighting or, you know, any of these other things that are maybe regulated by the state. But what's most important is the quality of the teacher at the front of the classroom.
That's right. And there's even a literature on businesses. And it seems like the quality of your boss has a huge impact on like the output and the productivity of the workers. So it's more like the individual than everything around them.
Yeah, that's interesting. Looking at childcare regulations, one of the things that strikes me is how enormous the number of regulations are. I was just looking at 2025 book that the state publishes, and it's 100 pages of regulations that cover everything from, you know, the surface of the outdoor playground to the how you handle garbage containers and how to wash utensils and all sorts of things. Do you have any idea like how do these regulations come into being and how do they get to be so broad and extensive?
I don't actually know how they came into being. I assume it just came in a piecemeal fashion. Someone's like, oh, we should regulate this, we should regulate that. And then pretty soon you have all these regulations where a single regulation might not matter. You might follow the regulation regardless if it's there or not. But then once you put everything on, it just becomes so much more burdensome. Like an analogy I've heard before is like if you start throwing rocks in a stream, one rock doesn't do anything. But once you get enough rocks there, it really dams it up and makes it hard for the water to go through. So like this, right, yeah, so I know for Michigan, right, it requires 35 square feet per child in indoor space, which is actually the national average, you know, about 75 square feet the national average is about 75 square feet outdoor, but Michigan actually doesn't have a requirement for that, whereas most states do. And so it's just kind of interesting when you actually look at this, like how the regulations vary and it doesn't, no consistency. Like in Michigan, you have to have a 48-inch fence if you're outside, whereas some state, the requirement's 4 feet. Well, I guess that's 48 inches. It's like some states have no minimum, some say 4 feet. I mean, it's like some say 48 inches. I don't know. I guess the regulation varies by inch or feet by state. But it just like gets there, and then it doesn't leave.
Yeah, so what? Why do you think that is? These regulations seem to only move in one direction, which is to add more to the bunch, you know, more rocks in the stream. How come it seems rare that they don't remove them or lessen the burden? What's the dynamic there? How come that doesn't happen?
Yeah, I think it's just hard to get rid of a regulation once it's there, especially about kids. It's really hard to say, let's loosen up regulations around kids, like you mentioned before, like people could object to this. I think that's very true. That's why for some of these child staff ratios, my first thought is, why don't we just move to the national average? Like, that's it. So I'm not going anything crazy here. I'm like, just put us for the national average. And then this should help alleviate some burdens on childcare centers on trying to find a steady supply of workers. And yeah, I don't know. And again, it's something really small. So like, say if you're age 1 to 1.5, instead of having a 4-to-1 ratio, do 5-to-1, which is national average. It's hard to get people worked up about that. Like, it's hard to go to Lansing and say, why don't we really push this change where we just change it by like one kid? I mean, it's, I don't know how many legislatures will be like, that's my number one priority. But it could matter, right? In the long run, that could really matter.
Yeah, and I guess you also have the challenge too of concentrated benefits and dispersed costs a little bit. Classic kind of problem in economics and public policy, where the current childcare providers, these businesses, they don't necessarily want to go and make it easier or less expensive for other people, other businesses to provide this service, because then that makes it more, their service more competitive, might eat away at their profits, might make it more difficult for them to operate their business. That's part of this as well, isn't it?
Right, yeah, that is a very good saying. I teach that saying in my class, concentrated benefits diffuse cost. Like for another example, in Michigan, you have to have a child development associate credential in order to be a director of a childcare center. Some states don't require this at all. So again, there's big heterogeneity across the regulation. And so if you already have a child development associate credential, you're not going to lobby to get rid of that degree. And then you open yourself up to more competition. So the benefits are concentrated towards you once you get that. And so there's no natural lobbying group to argue against this. Like, I assume you don't have a child development associate credential, but you're not looking to start a childcare center. So you're not going to lobby against this. And at some point, it could be easier to just get the credential than to actually try to set up some lobbyist group to get rid of this law.
Yeah, and I think potentially another challenge too is that is the fact that most families, experience the cost of childcare just for a limited number of years, and then it's over, and they enroll their kid at a public school or private school or something, and they pay tuition or not, and so they also, the consumers also don't really have a like a persistent need to get these rules changed, because they know they're going to be done with them, in a couple of years or however long it is. And so that kind of momentum never builds up amongst consumers either.
Yeah, that's very true. That's a good point. Yeah, it's eventually you just stop thinking about it. Like my kids, they went to daycare, maybe 2, 3 days a week for a couple of years, not extensively. But yeah, this is something that I hadn't really thought about since then. It's interesting looking at all these regulations, how different everything is and how some of these just absolutely has to drive up cost. Like for another example, this isn't in Michigan, but if you want to be a director, at one of these childcare centers in Massachusetts, you have to have 42 months experience. Whereas in Michigan, it's about 960 hours, so say about half a year. And so that's like very different there. But yet I know of no papers that discuss the difference in quality between Massachusetts and Michigan, even though there's like a half year to 4 year gap. It's just like this arbitrary number that someone picked, and then it's easy to say, well, it's for the kids, when at the end of the day, it really probably doesn't matter. If anything, it just drives up costs and makes it harder to run.
Yeah, I wonder, are there other types of effects of having so many detailed regulations? Like, as I looked through some of the book that the state publishes with all these different regulations, many of them seem to me just to be impossible to perfectly abide by and also impossible for the state to actually enforce. I mean, these are things like, you know, the type of ventilation that you have in certain areas or how food preparation is done. And like, I think I saw one that had, you know, the temperature of the water that you needed to have in order to wash dishes in it. Certainly no one, these people are not putting a thermometer in the a dishwasher to make sure it's warm enough or whatever it is. What do you think are some other effects of kind of those really nuanced and detailed rules?
Yeah, that's, it's one of those, there's, wasn't there a book that said a felony a day or something like that where.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're actually felonies a day. Yeah, whatever that. So you know what I'm talking about. Right. I think this could be one of those cases where someone's like, you know what, we really want these to be clean. So the water's got to be this temperature. But if you're dealing with a bunch of crying kids, I mean, does it really matter if it's off by 5 degrees? And so this is just one way that increases that burden that makes it harder. Even if no one comes and checks, you got to know that in the back of your mind, it's like, if I didn't do this right, if someone shows up, then this could be an issue. We could get fined. We could have problems. Even though at the end of the day, it's not really an issue. It doesn't really matter the exact temperature of the water. I mean, just get a little soap on it, get it clean. I mean, you're good to go. Kids are dirty anyways. It's good to have a little bit of germs, build up their immune systems.
Yeah, that's actually, that's a difficult thing to regulate though. It's like a little bit of dirt is good, but not too much.
Right. You got to have that optimal amount.
Yeah. I suspect that these regulations take the opposite approach, which is wanting to heavily sanitize everything in an abundance of caution.
Right. Yeah. And at some point, it's good just to have someone clear house. So Mansur Olson, he was an economist, political scientist. At some point, I don't actually advocate this. He said it could be good just to lose a war because you just clear out so much. Like if everything is bombed, you just got to start over again. So if we just started over again with all these regulations, like in Michigan, you have to be 18 to work in a childcare center. Other states, it's 16. I mean, doesn't matter if you can. Why can't you work at 17? Some states, it's 21. You have to work in a childcare center like Massachusetts. Like, why can't you be 20? I don't know. Like, yeah, how do you get rid of these? It's, I don't know. You just have to get someone who's, I don't think in a Malay in Argentina, someone that's just really gung-ho about deregulation and goes and clears a lot of these up. And for some of this, I'm not even advocating deregulation. I'm just saying change the regulation to be more the national average. So again, nothing overly crazy, but it's hard for anyone to get really worked up about this for all these reasons that we just said.
Yeah, it seems to me that, you know, like you mentioned, running a daycare, you know, your main job is managing these children and keeping them safe and occupying them and providing them some educational opportunities and play and these sorts of help in their development. And this involves all sorts of like, you know, questionable decisions and trade-offs. And, you know, it seems very difficult or it seems impossible that any one daycare provider might be, you know, actually using these rules and sticking to them strictly in order to run their business properly. I mean, at some point we have to just accept the fact that we just have to trust people's best judgment on these things. We can maybe we should create, you know, like you said, not totally deregulate, but just create broader, clearer guidelines. And then ultimately you have to leave it up to these professionals to run their business the way they think is best and make those kind of decisions. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's right. Like for us, when we drop our kids off, you know, at their little school that they went to, and we could talk to them when they came home, you know, how excited they were at their little daycare thing. There was actually a barn in the backyard that was full of like cows and sheep and ducks, cats, chickens, everything. And they absolutely loved it. Like they got to go play with a bunch of kittens. My kids milk cows. I've never milked a cow. Like they got to walk sheep and goats around. They got to, you know, play with the little ducklings and chickens. And so they just absolutely loved it. And so it's one of those things where like, as parents, we could just see that our kids like really enjoyed this place. And so I didn't look up any regulations. I didn't care what the regulations were. I just know my kids were happy. And so at the end of the day, that's really what should matter the most. The toughest regulation for this could actually just be the parental input. Like, do I want my child here or not? And the parents could just be the regulators. And if you have enough competition and there are enough different places to go, then that is actually the best regulation you have. Just a lot of people competing for your business. And then they have to have the quality that the parents demand.
Yeah, yeah, well said. And I guess there's always the possibility that you have, these providers who maybe aren't being forthright with the parents or are trying to hide something from them. And then you might build a case for more regulations over those businesses. But I also think there's a challenge there as well, because if these daycare providers, these hypothetical ones, are not willing or, you know, trying to hoodwink parents about the services they're providing, they're probably also not going to be very particular about following any regulation that the state creates.
Right. Yeah. It's important not to fall for the Nirvana fallacy. So if you know the saying, Nirvana fallacy is where you take reality and compare it to the app, you know, the optimal utopian version. So if you say, well, if we'll have this government regulation, therefore everything will be perfect. Like you said, it's just not true. So it's like, what is a better regulator of these childcare? What the parents see and how they feel about it, or what's coming down from Lansing about the temperature of the water? I mean, it's what the parents, like the feedback the parents give is going to be, I feel like, the much stricter route than what could come down by government.
Yeah. Are there other policy areas that suffer from some of these same kinds of problems and dynamics as childcare regulation that you're familiar with?
Off the top of my head, my first thought is probably all of them, but I can't think of anything right now. I assume like a lot of food. I haven't looked at the food industry. I know finance is one of the most heavily regulated, like healthcare. I assume in healthcare is massively regulated, and you could probably get rid of a bunch of regulations there and it would make things simpler. Like a lot of these, or even just like a lot of some states start getting like education requirements. Like my sister, she's an elementary school teacher. At some point she had to go get like a master's degree online. And like, I think the studies show like none of this actually helps. People just want to say, hey, look, we require this. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. The best training you could do for being a teacher is just get in front of a classroom and teach. Like a master's degree, maybe you learn something, but I mean, you don't have to spend tens of thousands of dollars and years of your life when you could just teach, and it's a much better way to train someone who's getting in front of kids. So, I guess to kind of wrap this up, maybe to go back to the fertility, right? All these regulations, like that first paper, it found that fertility goes down compared to what people want. And so this can have lots of negative effects. If we just circle back to how we started this, one big one, not to just put everyone in terms of taxpayers, but the government has promised a lot of money in the future. And so the fewer kids we have, it's going to increase the tax burden. I just look for the 2025 federal budget, more than a fifth of the budget, Social Security, more than an eighth is Medicare. And then almost 20% is interest on debt. So just those three things right there is more than 50% of the budget. And also promises the government has already made. You also lose family ties if you don't have bigger families. The loneliness epidemic, perhaps one reason for this is just fewer kids, fewer family ties, you know, fewer cousins, all this. A lot of innovation comes from younger people. So you don't have as many kids, you have less innovation in the future. So this fertility issue, it's something that the modern economy has never faced. It's always been upward population, but now it's an aging population and then it'll be a declining population. And I'm not sure if anyone fully knows how to handle this, especially with all of these entitlement spending, these unfunded liabilities that the government's promised. But how are you going to pay for this? Like, especially look at Japan, South Korea, how are you going to pay for all of this if you just don't have the workers?
Yeah. We did a study a few years ago about policies that impact state population. And one of the takeaways from that is there's not a lot that states can do actually to increase, you know, to enact policies that will increase population growth. But maybe this is one of them. Maybe childcare regulation is one of them. And like you said, we don't have to do necessarily anything dramatic or radical, but just align Michigan more with the national average in some of these regulations, and it could have could reduce the cost for families, improve affordability, and maybe even lower that fertility gap.
Right. Yeah, I've heard the same thing. It's really hard to figure out how to increase fertility. And so there are different papers. There's like this one. There's one on like housing costs and all this. So if you could just change a lot of little variables a little bit, then maybe cumulatively that can matter. Again, I don't think there are that many papers that have full empirical support, because this is kind of a new issue. So it's kind of hard to say this is exactly what will work when this is. This is just currently ongoing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Warren, thanks very much. We're out of time already. I really enjoyed the conversation, and thanks for being on the Overton Window podcast.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.